Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello, Blenders. It's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and co-host of the Real Blend podcast. And we have something special for you guys this week. It is John M. Chu, director of Wicked Part One, the smash blockbuster musical that is dominating theaters right now. And he is a guest on the Real Blend podcast, coming on to talk post-release all things Wicked and the incredible stuff that has gone into not just the production of the movie, but the success that it is enjoying. A bit on the awards campaigns and a lot of talk about part two as well. We were efforting John for a long time, trying to get him in the lead up to the release of the film. Obviously, as you guys saw, he and the cast did a ton of press, but his reps are always making it very clear that he wanted to come on Real Blend. He wanted to talk to us. Jake and I were able to sit down with him, dig into Wicked, talk to him about kind of where he's at right now. And it's public knowledge that he also just had his fifth child. So he has a newborn baby and is also trying to juggle the release of the movie, a lot of the awards campaigning that is going on right now on behalf of Wicked. The sing-along versions are going to be coming back to theaters around Christmas time. So just a ton of stuff going on in this man's life. And you guys are going to find that he is just as energetic and creative and open and passionate about the filmmaking process and about this movie specifically and how it's being received as anyone could ever be. So it's a real thrill to have John Chu on the show at this time talking about this movie and his career in general and where he hopes that it goes. You guys are going to love this conversation. If you like Real Blend, if you love Wicked, you guys are going to want to give this a listen right now. So without further ado, here's John M. Chu, director of the hit film Wicked Part One on the Real Blend podcast.
We're so excited to be able to talk with you after the release because I feel like it allows us to ask some questions that otherwise we couldn't ask. And I'm going to start out with what I hope comes across as a positive question, because I really would love for you, John, to compare the opening weekends of In the Heights versus Wicked. One of them was not the weekend that any of us expected or wanted for a movie that we all loved with all of our hearts. The other one, a weekend that surpassed anyone's expectations of what we thought a musical could do opening weekend. Both movies are great and both deserve the best. I'm sort of curious, though, as the man behind the camera, what were those two Sundays like once the final numbers started coming in?
You know, I feel very blessed to have those experiences in my life. I love In the Heights. I hope people go rediscover In the Heights. It's my heart. We put so much effort into that, and there's a lot of love in that. But it was hard opening weekend because you want it to perform, you know, just instinctually we make it for an audience to go enjoy and be together. And that's why I make movies. And so that was hard to get through, but it did adjust my internal sort of wirings about why I make movies and had to really focus on the reason is you make a thing and then you give it to the audience and then they decide whatever they want to decide with it. And so I had to sort of come to terms with that during that period of time. So when Wicked was coming out, I was sort of ready for whatever was to happen. And it allowed me, even in production, to just stay focused on the work. I was talking to the girls, you know, with all the pressure. I always use this term that that stress is the misuse of imagination, that we as creatives have so much imagination. And when we worry, we're creating all these scenarios in our head, and that doesn't use our imagination to its best. So it allowed me to sort of refocus, and everything was about the details of this movie, about every color, every costume, every production design, every nuance in the performances. So by the time it came out, we knew that we made something special for ourselves, and hopefully that would translate to an audience. So on a week like this, on a week with the last, you know, 10 days has been pretty mind-blowing. I definitely would have my protective shell on for a while, but I've just started to let it in, and it's been a really nice journey.
You beat Grease, man. You're good.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Pretty nice.
John, I wanted to talk to you about the choreography in a specific scene, which is just to get the sense of how you and Christopher Scott feel about the way that What Is This Feeling has been received. But while researching that, I was kind of blown away to see the entire sequence on Wicked's official YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And it just seems really odd to me to see a Blockbuster sharing high quality versions of songs that this audience wants to see. So in talking about the choreography, can you also just talk about how you guys kind of understand that your audience wants this material right now and you guys are going sort of breaking boundaries to deliver it to them?
Yeah, I think that that's something very new to all of us, even to Universal, as people are like recording in the movies. I was actually very surprised that even the surprise cameos that the massive fans kept that pretty secret for a long time. They knew it for a long time. And so there is a respect, I think, from the audience of the Wicked movies to deliver to people what they want in those ways. But it is brand new for me. I did see it during Crazy Rich Asians. We screened that movie a lot. And that was where I was much more bristling at. You can't just give that scene away. You can't just show it all these people for free. They got to go pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But what happened was it really got the sort of our foundation of people spreading the word very, very quickly. And they owned it. And I saw how this sort of modern audience likes to own it in that way and share with people. That's a part of our culture now, is we love to share. So that I got used to that during. So this one I was a little less, although showing a whole musical number is very scary. And even at that point, we hadn't fully like dialed in all our colors yet. So it's sort of like, you know, transitioning into, Rec 709 space before you've really gotten in there. But that said, they take it and they run with it. It's been really nice. And for that, for Chris and I, you know, Christopher Scott is an amazing choreographer. I've been close with him for 15 years. We were even roommates at some certain point when he was going from a dancer to a choreographer. So if there's anything I've learned is you go through an experience of growing in a business with your friends, it is like so fulfilling. Alice Brooks, who shot this movie, I went to college with. She shot my college short film.
Oh my gosh.
And the way we all work together, camera, so movement of the camera itself, of the frame itself, choreography of the people within the frame, all work together because we get to like basically call each other out. Like, that's not good enough. Hey, what if you did this? And we also trust each other. We go down roads that are can be very scary and can be almost, it could be on the verge of humiliating if we do it wrong. Mm-hmm. But we also go down that road because we know if it is, then we'll just go back. And so that trust is very embedded. And for What Is This Feeling specifically, we knew the high energy of that. And what I love about Christopher Scott and his team that he brings together is that we wanted to make a timeless musical, something that felt like it was always on our shelf, and yet we never really put it in. And yet also timelessness, that definition of what is timeless dance, redefine that, because these street styles have been with us for so long now. To incorporate that in something that is classy and that is timeless sort of crystallizes that in the language of movement. And I think that all the different shapes and sizes and skin color, to me, like, that is a part of what Wicked is doing as well.
Absolutely.
Wow. John, the last time you and I sat down together was on the Universal backlot for The Wicked Junket just a couple of weeks ago. And there was a buzz about the junket that day, that there was someone else walking around the lot that day, that the man himself, Sir Steven Spielberg, was on the lot that day, and he was on the lot for you. And I'd love to know, has the master seen Wicked, and I'd love to know his thoughts on it.
I don't know how much I want to say other than, he's the one who found me, found my short film when I was 22 years ago, 23 years ago, something like that. And when he finds your short and the business gets a word of that, it changes your whole life. And so to have him come, he actually asked me to see the movie and wanted to see it in Dolby Atmos and with me. It was just us in the theater and his producer, Christy. So we all sat down there and talk about mind blowing. I mean, no matter how many times I'm with him, I stutter. I don't know what to say. I don't even know whether to call him Mr. Spielberg or Steven or whatever. Like, it's a lot. But what an honor. We sat there for 30, 40 minutes after. And he's so interesting because he is curious. He's curious about how we shot certain sequences, why we did certain things, how we mixed physical effects with visual effects, and he loves the musical, so he knows how hard it is, and he expressed that. So
to have that conversation with him on the Universal lot, has got
in
to
the
be
seat of a movie of the new theater sitting next to each other, like just us, like no entourage, none of that stuff, just us two people who love making movies. And sometimes when he'd ask me, I was very self-conscious because I'm like, this is the way I make movies, but I don't want to tell you how I did that because you might think that's idiotic. But I, you know, he couldn't be more kind. I think that's the biggest thing I learned from him, is his generosity to young filmmakers, to, and I'm not young, but to filmmakers who are finding their voice, and to people that are aspiring to be in this business, is bar none. Like, it is the real deal. What you see in his interviews, why you see that is, they say don't meet your heroes, but you do want to meet Steven Spielberg. It's pretty nice.
Well, return the favor with West Side Story. Come on.
Yeah.
Run it through the projector and have you get to ask him
That's
questions about
saying.
It.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
John, I want to talk about Frances Hannon, who honestly cannot get enough credit for the work that she does in this film. It's absolutely incredible. And I was reading about the process to find the right makeup for Elphaba and the different tests they went through. But I need to hear your side of it. Like, I understand that it was like a discontinued makeup that they found, and the different ways that it had to show up in all different types of lighting, indoors, outdoors, because I honestly think, having gone back and now seen like a lot of bootleg copies of the stage production, like the makeup in the film is so incredible. It looks so good. How long did it take you guys to finalize it? And were there any points during the process where you maybe panicked and just thought like, it's not going to be good enough. It's not going to get to where I need it.
Well, you know, what I love working with Frances, we worked together on Now You See Me Too, and we were doing that when she won her Oscar for the Wes Anderson movie that she did, Grand Budapest Hotel. So I feel very lucky that when that we got to work together again, and Green was probably the number one thing we had to tackle when she got on. And we had seen all types of green, and this was not just, she had to work with Alice to figure out, okay, in every lighting situation, when does green actually go away? Oh, in that pink, warmer light, the green goes away. Mm-hmm. And so when do we want to use that? How do we use that as a tool for us? Or do we avoid it completely? So those are those questions. And then how do you make it not look like face paint? I mean, ultimately, that was the thing. It's in a close-up. If it looks like she's in a costume, then yeah. How are we feeling anything? And what we found early was... this idea of actually making it not perfect, having skin, whether it's freckles or having little skin scars, like those things really allowed it to come through as a physical, real skin. Also working with Cynthia, of course, she has her own view of how it should be. And that was really fun to work with. So everyone has to work together on a look like that. My instinct was Cynthia will not want to wear this green for almost a year of right. shooting. It's just going to be so much wear and tear. And yet when we put it on her and we did this test with her, she turned into Elphaba, like literally with the freckles and the things. And she really wanted to try these green contacts. And at first I was opposed to, I didn't want her to look like a creature, but Frances was really smart in finding different versions of that. And we tried on all different contacts. And the one that we found was not the most subtle, but probably one little level up from that, because it didn't block her actual acting. Some of the heavier versions, I felt like we had a screen in front. It's very subtle, but knowing what Cynthia does with her eyes, like we did not want that to be a block. So all those things together had to work together. You couldn't go too neon with that green. It had to also pop differently than the Shiz costumes, which were sort of a sea green blue. And so all those things we had to balance. I mean, color was so important in our movie of how we balance that. So that was when Cynthia was like, I got to wear it. That's what it feels right. And then, you know, the experts take it from there, and it looked amazing.
John, you're talking about what she does with her eyes. The first scene to make me cry in your movie is when she's going to appear at the dance for the first time. And the quiet acting she does before coming out is unbelievable. She's so good in that moment.
So good. And that was something that isn't even written in the script. I thought we were going to have a little space in like a lobby area, and we didn't build that space. So when we're shooting it, we're like, where can she have this moment? And we're like, well, there's this little hallway, like right before you turn the corner, we're like on the edge of the set. Like if you go one more inch to the right, you see offset. And so she's like, I can make it work here, which Cynthia's that good. And so, and then Alice really put this sort of spotlight so that she could walk into a pool of light. And so that moment of just being proud of what she was doing and excited for her first party is just soul crushing. And even when she gets the hat for the first time, it's like, what does she feel towards the hat? And Cynthia made a very strong choice of this hat. I do have a connection with this hat. This hat's going to be with me. It can't just be this, oh, maybe I wear this, I'll be popular or something. But it has to be like the strangeness of this hat has some sort of timeless connection with me. And so I love it when she turns her head to that hat when she looks at it, and it just makes it hers.
Goosebumps.
I've got to say, one of my favorite memes to come out of the movie is Galinda's granny watching the news and seeing Oz's Most Wanted flying around with her hat on and going like, what the hell? Like, I laughed so hard at that.
And that hat's complicated. I mean, Paul had to design a hat that was the iconic silhouette of it, but not be that. And also, we worked a lot with Alice, because once you have a hat that's tall, now my framing is like, wait, what do you give room for? Everything's going to be all this negative space, or can you cut off the hat? Those right. questions would be like, can you cut off the hat in this shot? I don't know. Let's give it the room. Or yes, you can. The hat's not the thing here. And so now, and luckily Cynthia and Ari are the same height. So that at least gave us a baseline. And then you got to give room for that hat or not. And then she has this crown. So later you get to do both. But it was all those things were complicated decisions and decisions you had to make early. Because if you made the wrong decision, if you met the hat too big, and we had to have all sizes of brims, because, you know, in the Oz dust, we had to do that in one, because she couldn't perform it just in pieces. It was conjuring too much. So we would do like 15 minute oneers to get these performances, both in close up and mediums and wide and following her. And so the brim, so we have over 700 lighting cues that are switching as we're going around her. We do a full 360 around her. And so Alice and her team and Dave, who are working their butts off to adjust every time that camera is moving to one side, and then what size of that brim. And we had to see her eyes all throughout that and not make it like it didn't make sense for this. So there was a lot of technical, even though it seems simple, there's a lot of technical things going on there.
You are the perfect Real Blend guest, dude. You have no idea. I would love to talk
about shop anytime. We could go for 3 hours.
We can keep going, man.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Get 1 pound packs of flavorful Private Selection Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $5.99 each. Then get select varieties of Lay's or Kettle Cooked potato chips for $1.99 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I want to talk about your decision. Obviously, you know that you're going to involve Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth at some point in the production. How do you decide where they perfectly fit into the film so that it is a moment so that we can sort of like applaud it and recognize what's happening, but also you don't want to take us too far out of the movie so that we're remembering that we're watching a movie? Like, it's a tightrope that you have to walk to the placement and how you use them. I'm sort of curious how you came up with that perfect spot.
Yeah, it was a tightrope that we all had to talk about a lot with Steven and Winnie as well. Like, where's the best place? And we had them as cameo roles at some point. Oh, maybe they're Galinda's parents, or maybe they're this or that. And those were all fine and good. But every time we sort of thought about it more, it didn't feel like they're at the top of their game right now. They're not like some people who don't do it anymore. Like they are there. You want them to do their thing. And I always felt like as a fan myself, like if I see them in this movie, I'm going to want them to do their thing. And so we had the section already of this Wizomania. It wasn't exactly those words, and it wasn't exactly, it was actually a more of a ride that they go on. Wizomania was going to be this almost like a, it's a small world where you get into a boat and it takes you through the history of Oz. And it was going to be a performance that happens around them and all this stuff, and then send you back out to the Wizard's Palace. So we had that because we needed to set up what the show didn't have too much about, that we had to do was set up the Grimmery, why the wizard was here, what the prophecy is. Like, we had a lot of information to give. And it was during those conversations that Steven and I were talking, and I suggested we have this section anyway that's sort of outside of the narrative that we need to give. Maybe that's where you do it, so you can add a little sugar to the information. And he's like, give me one night. And he rewrote the whole thing as a performance for these girls. And he did it. And it was like so fun. And that's where it felt like, okay, this is a great moment of sort of a send off. But even in the edit, we debated it back and forth, like how much to give, how much to see them. Because plenty of shots where they bow, where they leave, where they wave goodbye. And like, how much is too much for the audience? And so we wavered back and forth a little bit and tried to find the right medium of that. I mean, that's somewhat in testing, but that's why I love the editing process too.
Awesome. Imagine being able to just say, give me one night, and then coming back with that.
And that one night was raining. So it's like pouring rain. We have this giant canopy over the stage, but it's raining everywhere else. Our cameras are under, you know, our technocrane's under this canopy, and we're trying not to get them wet. They have these beautiful outfits that if it gets wet a little bit, they're going to drag and change, and you have footsteps everywhere. So we're trying to keep everything dry so that you don't have footsteps and wetness. And but we had one night, and it was a magical night. Everyone was there, and it was just one of those crying nights all night.
Damn.
John, I want to talk about Bo and Yang. One aspect that our readers have really latched onto is the incredible commute that he did to juggle SNL and Wicked as well, too. Is that completely out of the ordinary? Have you seen other examples of people doing that in order to make a role work? And at any point, did you just think, like, this is too much on this guy? I know he's perfect for the part, but we have to kind of give him a break.
No, I mean, I posed the question to him early because he was like, I'm friends with him, so I've known him for a while. And we were looking for Fanny and Shen Shen, these sort of side characters, really. But I knew if we had him, he would kill it. Like, he would make a meal out of it. Yeah. And I felt like we needed another comedic engine throughout. And so when I asked him, he was like totally down, but he had this schedule. I don't know too many stories of that other than like Michael J. Fox during Back to the Future. I remember he was playing Back to the Future. So I'd heard that in the lore. Mm-hmm. And I think I heard like while they were doing like Tommy Boy, Chris Farley was doing back and forth. So there is a little bit of a history of that.
Yeah.
And if anyone could do it, it would be Bowen. And I did not know actually how grinding it was. That's how pro he was. When we were shooting, he made it feel like it was totally fine. It wasn't until later that he revealed to me, like, this is extremely hard, especially learning choreography. So
do you have to share your filming schedule with Lauren and everyone at SNL to like find a way, like, hey, here's when we need him?
Oh yeah, this is the power of Mark Platt, our producer, who loves to get into that stuff. That's something I'm like, I can't even deal with. But yeah, dealing with the SNL production and our production, and we have, you know, Madam Moore, we had Michelle for a certain amount of weeks. We have Jeff Goldblum for a certain amount of weeks.
And you had Michelle during her Oscar run.
During her Oscar run. That was insane. So she's back and forth too. She's getting beat up. But every time she came, she was super pro and she loved doing the work. So we have these schedules that are built in. And then we have this, everyone's schedules are moving on. Johnny's doing Bridgerton and Fellow Travelers. So any movement is like a huge shift in our schedule. So that was very scary. It was week by week of like, we have to hold these, but if Saturday Night Live has a thing that day, or hey, these are the big shows that he has to be at, he cannot miss, can't miss rehearsals for. So we always had to sort of be aware of that. That was always on top of it. And that's not counting the 9 million tulips that we planted, because when you plant 9 million tulips, they blossom at a certain point and you don't know when. And when they do, you have about 9 days to move and go shoot that. Otherwise, there was no point.
Oh my God.
I would love to be on the phone trying to explain to Lorne Michaels. It's the tulips, Lorne.
Gotta stick with that, man. That's the thing with this movie. it's so enormous, and there's such high stakes. But the production itself was so big that it looks simple. You get everybody together, but actually the moving pieces to make it work was a constant. We always were thinking about that's beside the live music, that's beside your actors of the day and trying to make sure it all worked. It is. It was in the weather. So it was a giant task. But
John, the example we keep bringing up on the show is the train. We're like, they built the train. In any other situation, that would just be green screen it. You know, let's just get them onto the train.
CGI, yeah.
And we're like, they built the train.
Nathan Crowley is a maniac. I love this guy, our production designer. And every time I was like, there's no way they're going to allow us to do a waterway into Shiz University. And we're going to do that. He's like, don't worry, John. I got it. He's like, I do this all the time. And studio would be like, well, you don't have to build it that big. Let's make it this small. And then he's like, come look at the size. And I was like, this is not the right size. And he's like, yeah, I already extended it. We're going to be bigger than this. Don't worry. I was like, okay. And then we get yelled at, and then we just keep going. So it was constant troublemaking, but maybe that's kind of what we want in filmmaking. It's like, let's go. We have an opportunity to make Oz. Let's go for it. And everyone's going to be looking at what we're doing. This is stuff we're going to show our great grandkids. This is the movies. Let's remind people what the movies are all about. And at every turn, we just did it. We just shot it.
And we thank you.
Yeah, amazing. John, you were talking about all the people's crazy schedules that you had in the cast. Your schedule right now, just in regards to, I mean, the fact that we're even able to get you on the show is huge. So I would love to know what your schedule is like in regards to part two. How much of you right now, obviously you are still in promotion mode for part one. You've got the awards campaign, which is like running for president. You got all the Q&As. So how are you balancing that and still, I'd imagine, still working on part two? And are you allowed to tell us how far along in the editing process of part two you are?
Yeah, and I just had a baby. So I got 5 kids now, 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a newborn.
Oh my God.
And congratulations. You gave us 30 minutes of your time. Amazing.
Technically, today I'm supposed to be working in the edit room for movie 2. So they were a little bit shocked that I'm here in New York for this day. But but they, you know, Myron, our editor, is amazing, and he can get started. We've already talked about things that we want to do. We shot this movie while shooting the other one. Thank God. I'm glad that we don't have to go back and try to get everybody back in. So we're in the same mode. I cut the movie in a rough form last year when we were cutting the first movie. So I understood the map. I could not go in blindly. So we understood what story we were telling on both ends of this. And knowing, do we need to steal stuff from there or not? And I feel good. We just have a lot of tweaking to do. That's where the magic happens. And so yeah, that's where I'm at right now with that. And of course, the music and the visual effects and all those things take extra time in it. I'm deep in it. And you just go, you just move. You know, this is like once in a lifetime. So you just get it done. That's what I love about movie making.
Selfishly, can you move the date up? Is something we've been asked multiple times. Does that give you nightmares?
I would love that. Technically, I don't think we can actually do it anymore because I think the everything takes so long to get.
Sure.
Once we actually get a cut, then you got to get all the like sort of the details in there. But no, I would have loved it coming out in the spring or in the summer or something like that. But I do think people discovering this movie over this period of time, people going back to see Wizard of Oz or watching the show.
I saw it this weekend with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. They played live along with the movie on the big screen.
Yes. Oh, that's fun. That's awesome. It's that kind of stuff that I think will get everybody ready for movie 2. And it's a banger.
Well, so I've had multiple theater fanatics ask me to please ask you your take on this.
Yes.
Without getting into any specifics, they would like to know if you're going to give them a proper recording of The Wicked Witch of the East. They are currently relying on bootlegs. And someone on our staff, Corey Cicciola, who's an enormous fan of the show.
Yes.
Just selfishly wants to have an actual recording of that. So.
I don't know what I'm allowed to say or not say at this point because it's still pretty early. But I will say it's a great number, and I think it's due time that people do get it so they can hear it over and over and over again. But I don't know the details yet. So
okay, thank you, John.
John, I was at a Super Bowl party earlier this year, and genuinely, I'm not blowing smoke. The movie trailer that made the party stop in their tracks and look at the screen was not Deadpool and Wolverine. It was not Twisters, much to Universal's regret. It was Wicked. It was the most like where the entire party stopped and went, wait, there's a there's a Wicked movie coming out. That's amazing. I know Universal has already come forward and said, listen, we're not going to do a trailer for part two during this upcoming Super Bowl. Do you know, I'm not asking you to tell us, do you know when the first time that we'll see anything of part two?
I will get shot if I tell you those details or even hint at those details. So I will say, no, I don't know anything.
Fair enough. Okay.
It will come in the right moment. Let me put it that way.
All right. Let's circle back around to the viral nature of part one and the memes that Jake was bringing up before earlier. One of my favorite ones that I'm seeing all over my timeline is the popular moment where Ariana says, right. And everybody getting to reenact their version of that. Are you surprised of some of the moments that have gone viral in the first movie? Are there some others that you kind of pre-predicted, like, this is probably going to take off? And specifically, have you seen the feedback that people want to see Ariana actually delivering that? Because she a little bit turns her back to the camera when she delivers it in that moment.
First of all, how fun is it that the audience gets to own all those little details? That's what Ari and Cynthia and I, we and Myron, our editor, our whole editorial, we laugh at all those little moments. I mean, right? We've been laughing at for a year. We think it's funny. Even the way that Ari says, like, she says so many funny things that feel like in this weird transatlantic accent of like, pink is the new black is the new pink or whatever she says. And another one where she says, or so I'm told, like there's like little things that you look at her, you're like, what planet are you from? Like, what were you channeling in this moment? And same thing with Cynthia, whether it's the wink or little things that she has, her most subtle smile to Fiero when she touches his scar and he says that he says this thing about the cub scratching him, and it those details to me are like what we love about it. So it's crazy, and I've done movies where people don't pay attention to any of that stuff. So it's really fun when everyone's like entering the building and it feels like we all went to summer camp together, because that's what we mostly pay attention to, is all those little things, because they add up. But it doesn't always feel like the audience, just needs to feel the things, but this one is really fun to have them explore.
I was told not to like bring this back. I told them specifically, I was like, oh, I don't really want to like bring this up, but I was telling Sean and Gabe that like even like my junket interview with the girls, like I've accepted that I've lost control of it. Like all the clips and the memes that have come of it, it's sort of that what I mean. You put it out there and you go, listen, whatever you guys do with it is your own thing. It's no longer yours.
You hire people that are intriguing. And we knew when hiring our cast for this, at the very least, they had to feel like they were from another planet. And so when you see Ari, when you see Cynthia, when you see Jeff Goldblum, Michelle, I mean, they're not human. Johnny Bailey is not human. How can you be that charming?
Right.
It's not human. Ethan Slater is not human. Nessa, like everyone has a certain charm. You just want to hang out with them at a party because they're going to say amazing things and it's going to be fun. That was the spirit that we knew Oz had to have. It had to feel a little bit left, a little bit right, a little bit never center. And you can do that in production design. You can do that in your clothing and your makeup and all that stuff. But the spirit of it is in the characters, and they owned that. And I think that people are finding that charm within it.
The charm that came out of the junket pairing of Jonathan Bailey and Jeff Goldblum, that room itself was just like, oh, come on. Like just this, it's almost unfair. If I didn't like them so much, it would annoy the shit out of me, if I'm being honest with you.
That's been one of my favorite things to watch all, because I didn't know what they were doing in all these interviews. And now I'm watching them like sing and dance. I'm like, wow. Wow. So having Jeff Goldblum on set, I mean, his knowledge, his depth of knowledge of art and theater and literature, that's what it is all the time. So then you pair him up with Johnny and it's like, come on.
It was actually a great pairing, which is a junket pairing is an art in and of itself. Yeah. I would imagine I was going to say after this movie, I'd imagine it's already started, that you are going to have every musical big screen adaptation thrown at you, and basically all of Hollywood going, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? I'm sort of curious, are you in the camp of, listen, I've spent a huge chunk of my life doing these, I'm good for a moment, I'm going to explore other things? Or are you already imagining what the opening scene of Hamilton might look like?
Listen, if I get to make musicals for the rest of my life, I'd be the luckiest guy. Like making musical movies, when you make one, you're like, why wouldn't I just try to do this all the time? There is a energy about being on set. There is a everyone knows what's happening in the when you and especially live music and a piano. And there is a energy of making a movie. It feels like student filmmaking because we're all in on it. And there's an intimacy, even though there's scope and all these the sort of presentational, but it's but it feels very intimate. And I would love that. That said, I want to explore all parts of who I am as a filmmaker. I've done that in the past. And so for me, it's a journey and we'll see what happens. But I'm not ashamed at all about doing more musicals or pushing it forward. I can't wait for other voices to get in there and do it. I'm just glad that we didn't tank the musical movie. more life to it, actually, because we need more.
Absolutely. John, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on the show, man. We are enormous fans of you and I'm so happy. All of us are so happy to see this movie taking off and getting the love that it deserves. So
you deserve this, man.
Congratulations on your baby. That's outstanding. And please come back on the show sometime soon.
We'll do it. Great work for on all the
we love you, buddy.
Cinema.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
We want to thank our good friends at Universal Pictures and, of course, John M. Chu for coming on the show. We did review Wicked on an earlier episode of Real Blend. If you guys want to hear our take on the hit musical, it is the episode with John David Washington as the guest. That week we reviewed Wicked Part 1 and Gladiator 2. Goes without saying, we loved Wicked, thought it was incredible. I was really blown away. Going into it, I knew the show. I had seen it once before. Really loved the way that it played around with the mythology and the lore of The Wizard of Oz, kind of flipped it on its head. But I was not prepared personally for how great Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo were in these parts. They are perfectly cast for it. I love Chu's direction in it. I love that we got a chance to talk to him about his choreography. And I really love the way that him and his team have his finger on the pulse of this fan base. And we talk a bit, as you heard, the marketing and the way that they are able to release these full clips and understanding how the relationship between filmmaker and audience has changed over the years. And you have to get this material into the hands of your rabid fan base to sort of keep them buzzing about the movie and keep it top of mind with the conversation. So I thought that was really, really smart the way he talked about that. And he's made an excellent movie and he's made a movie that now with part two is easily climbing to the top of our most anticipated lists for 2025, and that's a little bit of a tease of what we have on Real Blend coming forward. We're heading into December. We do have a full show coming up on our next episode. It's going to have Jude Law and Nicholas Holt combined as our guests. They have a movie coming out called The Order, and that was a great conversation that we had with those two. A few other great interviews that we have in line for the rest of this month, and then, of course, we're going to be doing our top 10s of the year and our most anticipated for 2025. So keep it locked here on the channel for when those episodes drop. The best way to make sure that you hear Real Blend the moment that it arrives is to subscribe to the YouTube channel, turn on your notifications, and you'll be alerted every time a new episode drops. In the meantime, do us a favor, share the show with a friend of yours who loves movies as much as you do. We'll continue to grow this community and head into 2025 as strong as ever with brand new Real Blend for you guys to enjoy.